people tend to hold the position of county sheriff for a while in our region. Very few sheriffs serve single term, so there are lots of sheriffs out there in the 5th, 10th, 12th year in office. That makes Corey Falls the exception. He's the Jackson County Sheriff, just a little bit into year number two, and he's moving ahead with changes to his department as the rookie status wears off. Corey Falls was the Deputy Chief of Police in Ashland when he was elected Sheriff of Jackson County over the incumbent Mike Winters in November of 2014. He served on SWAT team, detective, firearms instructor. He worked with the Snohomish County Sheriff's Office in Washington State. He's got degrees in health, organizational management, and he's working on a doctorate in business administration. So always a busy guy, it sounds like. Corey Falls, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Thanks for having me this morning.
How big a difference from the get-go running a county sheriff's department coming from the smaller, much smaller Ashland Police Force?
Well, I think the things that are different are certainly the corrections division in the jail and the civil department and the search and rescue. And it's been a great pleasure to get to know those different departments and work with the people in Jackson County that do those different functions.
I know there's a lot said about what to do when you take over an organization as a manager, you know, paint the wall or, you know, change the color of the vehicles or something. But so what were some of the first moves you made at the beginning of year one?
Well, just made it a more open environment for communication within the organization and got around to everybody and listened and just, you know, talked to people. Hey, what are we doing well? What do we need to improve on? What do we not need to do anymore? And took some time doing that and listened to people and listened to some of the concerns, and then we started moving forward.
Now, I've just recently announced some things coming up, some reorganizations, closing the basement of the jail, stuff like that. So why don't you run through the list for us?
Okay. So we did do a couple things this year. One was closing the basement of the jail. That was a tough decision. That was not a popular decision, especially in the community.
Was it a specialized part of the jail or just another floor?
It was the basement that had been remodeled, and that
where the sheriff's office actually used to be.
Where it used to be, yeah. And that area was at the time housing our female population. And after evaluating our operations at the jail, our staffing levels, our training levels, it became clear that it wasn't sustainable what we were trying to do, and we needed to take some time to reevaluate that space. So that was the basis of shutting the jail down.
Shutting just the basement of the jail.
The basement down, yeah. I don't want to scare everybody. Think
yeah,
the jail's
really, that would have been a big one.
Thank you.
So how many beds does this reduce the total population for the Jackson County Jail?
So there's about 62 beds down there. I think we went from 292 back to 230.
Mm-hmm. How big a crunch does this put on your ability to hold on to people, certainly pre-trial?
Well, after talking with my captain of the jail, the difference was maybe about a day. So it wasn't a big impact of how long we were holding people.
Really? So people's amount of time in there would be just that much less by one day?
Yeah.
All right. And so it was just now I noticed there are some interesting issues with the jail itself that because of the way it is designed create some security issues. It's not a pod jail as they're being built now. Explain that difference, if you would.
So our jail is a tiered jail, and there's three tiers, and then there's the basement. And it makes it very difficult to monitor several inmates all in one location. The more modern jail now are a pod system where you're more of in a centralized area, and you can see all of the inmates that are in there. And
so the cells more or less face sort of around a drum or something?
Yes, yeah. And you, with that system, you need less people to monitor more inmates. So with the Jackson County Jail, you're walking tiers, and you can't see all the inmates because you have to look up and down, and it's not an open system. So that's something that's just facility-wise, it's difficult for us. And then when you have the basement, that's not even on the tier. That's just in the basement, and you need a whole new set of staffing to monitor that area downstairs.
So you've begun to broach the topic of a new jail for mm-hmm. Jackson County, which is never a small endeavor. I mean, how much money are we talking about spending here, and have you started to identify ways in which that might be accomplished?
Have not looked into that. I want to start having some community discussions probably later on in the spring. If it's not something the community wants once they have all the information, then we're going to continue doing what we're doing and try to open up the basement of the jail again. After we get all this information of cost and what would be beneficial or not, then I think this has to be a decision with the county, with the community, what they think is the best approach for the safety of Jackson County citizens, and we'll move forward from there.
What would be, I mean, do you have a figure in mind for the optimum number of beds in a jail? And if you were to design it pod style, would you then be able to have a greater number of inmates with about the same staff?
I think you can. I think we can have, we could probably double our population with inmates in Jackson County with the same amount of staff that we currently have. And I know just across the border in Shasta County, they have a 400-person bed jail for a population that's probably 170,000 people. So I think we could do that. I think we could double our jail population with the staffing we have.
What would you say, as we head to this break, is that was the largest surprise you had as you took over the reins of the sheriff's office a year ago?
Well, no huge surprises. I've been very pleased with the employees at the sheriff's office. They've been a great group to work with. I've felt comfortable in the organization. I've been impressed by our efforts in search and rescue and their capabilities. I've been impressed by the professionalism of the employees there and the work they do. So I can't identify one surprise, but I've been very pleased with the reception I've gotten from the employees.
Corey Falls is the sheriff of Jackson County on the Oregon side, just entering his second year in office. We'll talk more about some of the changes he's planning to implement and what it's been like piloting the county's largest law enforcement agency when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 25. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest is Corey Falls, who is the sheriff of Jackson County, has been in office since January of 2015, so about 13 months in office now, beginning to make some changes in addition to some he's already made in looking at the approach to the operation of the Jackson County Sheriff's Department. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about this department in particular or law enforcement more generally. 800-838-3760 over the phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. It's interesting what things are on the top of the agenda for somebody who is a law enforcement administrator in your case, and what's on the top of the agenda for the community. And I noticed when you put out a recent list of things you want to do, the Second Amendment was at the top of that list. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that has to get mentioned. I need the Jackson County Commissioners just this week passed a resolution saying they didn't want any further background checks on the law. Why do guns always seem to need to be very high on the list of things that public officials, at least in Jackson County, have to talk about?
Well, I think it's important to the citizens who own and carry firearms. A lot of times I think their fear is that they're going to lose that right and have something taken away. So it is a concern. It's something that came up, I know in my campaign, came up in my first year in office, where citizens would ask and inquire, what do you think about this? And it's not so much as local government. I think the concern is that the federal government is going to come in and impose their will on citizens and try to take their stuff away, you know, especially their guns. And is there somebody that's going to protect me from that? This is the sentiment I get. And I think I've been consistent on my stance is I'm pro-gun. I'm for people having guns lawfully. And I try to just comfort people in the sense that it's not, I don't see it being real realistic that the government's going to come in and try to take people's guns away. But on the other hand, I watch that carefully to make sure that, you know, there's things that aren't imposed on the citizens that aren't fair.
One of the things that the commissioners talked about in the resolution was that it would take a lot of law enforcement time to do additional background checks. You're in law enforcement, so how does that strike you?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think specifically when we're talking about Senate Bill 941, I understand the
last year.
Yeah. I understand the intent that went into that when it came to some of the background checks for when a private owner was going to, you know, transfer a weapon to somebody else. And And I know for the sheriff's office sake, we don't have the resources or the time to do a lot of that investigative work or background checks. On the other hand, if we had an incident similar to what happened in Roseburg, we might do some background checks to see certainly how they got the firearms and look into that after
the fact. Yeah. Mm-hmm. As we talk about other Western Oregon counties, then, I mean, it's obviously an issue that the counties were largely supported by timber cutting on BLM lands, the ONC lands, for decades. That system has fallen away, so one of the major sources of county income just isn't there, and it's had a devastating effect on the likes of Josephine County, where the property tax rates are just not low enough to pick up any of the difference there, really. And so you've got a county right next door to yours with, I don't know, on an average day, what, one or two patrol deputies on the streets?
Yeah, it's very few.
Mm-hmm. And so how, first of all, has Jackson County, aside from the fact it's got a higher tax rate, property tax rate, managed to stay, if not immune, at least somewhat buffered against that kind of devastation?
Well, I think it is what you said. Jackson County citizens, we pay a little more taxes. And from the sheriff's office standpoint is we try to do the best we can providing a level of service with the resources we have, and we've been able to manage that.
So how many patrol deputies are on the street any given shift, for example, in Jackson County?
On a given shift, probably around three or four.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for the entire county. And that doesn't count our contract cities that we have that could be out there. But right now, shift-wise, we have four deputies scheduled for each of the day shift and night shift.
Which is a lot of ground to cover, because granted you're covering generally the unincorporated areas of Jackson County, but we're still talking a county that is actually bigger than two states.
Yeah, so we're 2,800 square miles. That's a big county when you have limited resources. And then on top of that, certainly those deputies have days off. They have trainings. Every now and again, they're sick or have a family concern that they need to tend to. So we're always trying to get the appropriate resources out there.
Corey Falls is the sheriff of Jackson County and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Is Jackson County buffered perpetually, or has it just been fairly lucky so far? I mean, are there potential budget issues down the road for Jackson County? Particularly for your office?
For our office, we're going to continue to I can tell you just in terms of population growth and the sheriff's resources and in terms of deputies, as the population has grown, we've lost some deputies.
Mm-hmm.
So that hasn't matched up. So we're going to need eventually to take a look at our resources that we have for our population and see if we can't continue our level of service.
So you're working on basically about a $30 million budget at this point, and total staff about 166, it looks like?
Yes, yes.
Which is, you know, it's a fair number of people. But now a lot of this, when you run a jail, though, I mean, a lot of your, like more than half your staff is corrections alone, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. We have about 65, I want to say, within our corrections division right now. And those aren't deputies out on the street. When you really break it down to 165 employees, that means right now we have 20 deputies on the patrol schedule, you know, out there. And out of those 20 deputies of those positions, two are in the academy, one's out on leave. Other people are out. So I always say when you're looking at our patrol staffing, at least, which is right around 40 to 50 deputies, that actually means what we have right now is 16 working the road.
So there's not a lot you can do to reorganize it, because as you pointed out, the jail requires certain levels of staffing, and I'm certain you get into some stuff with unions and concerns about employees in there. So if you had a little more money, what's the first place you'd direct it in Jackson County?
Well, one thing I wanted to do, and we've done that, we haven't been able to backfill it from patrol, but one thing we have been able to do is implement a school safety deputy program, and that was something that started after the Christmas break. And then we need another road deputy and somebody in detectives, somebody that can start taking on and training for our high-tech crimes unit. That's a big priority to have somebody that's trained up and capable of doing those types of investigations.
Which is an interesting point to drop us at, the idea of high-tech crimes, because as we heard in the news yesterday with the issue of the federal government trying to get Apple to de-encrypt the cell phone for one of the people who shot all those people in Southern California,
right.
Crime involves a lot more sophisticated equipment than it used to. And so how can a local sheriff's office, for example, keep up?
Well, that's a great question. I ask myself that every day. The level of training and that goes into especially a particular position like the high tech crimes is significant, and the resources that you need, and just the intelligence that goes into the whole computer forensics and the knowledge of that takes a lot of time. It is difficult to keep up. It's nice to have the city of Medford next door and the resources from the FBI and Homeland Security that does some of these computer crimes that we can partner with. But those other resources are a huge help and key to this.
Corey Falls is the sheriff of Jackson County. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about law enforcement issues for his department specifically and law enforcement generally. Phone number here is 800-838-3760. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Steve in Eugene. Welcome to the Exchange with Sheriff Corey Falls. Steve,
Eddie, go ahead. Question is, do you have enough crime in your county to fill 400 bed jail? And if that's the case, do you currently have a jail with a revolving door on it where you got to let prisoners go simply because you don't have the bed space by federal mandate or whatever?
All right. Thanks for the question, Steve. And in fact, there has been an order on the Jackson County Jail since the mid-80s, I guess, to keep the population down to a certain number, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I believe we have the crime. We have a lot of people out on outstanding warrants. We could be able to enforce more of that. So I do believe that we have the crime that we could keep, 400 people in based on warrants and criminal behavior. And yes, to his question about the revolving door, there are people that come in, they're processed, and they're released fairly quickly.
It's a priority kind of system, though, where you got to figure out, okay, this one's a little heavier than this one, so this one we just got stays, but this one who's on a lower charge goes.
We have something that's called a matrix, and we look at the matrix, and that identifies several things about the inmates. Their work status, their criminal history, their residency, all those things are taken into account as to the crime they've committed, why they're in, why they're coming. That's all taken into account within a matrix to determine who's going to stay and who's going to be released.
Now, I don't know how aware people are of this. Steve lives in Lane County, where there's a unique situation where Springfield has its own city jail. But the fact is that for most counties in the region, if not all, the only lockup is provided by the county sheriff's office. So there is no jail for the city of Medford. There's no jail for the city of Ashland, et cetera.
Right. There isn't it, and I've seen Springfield Jail. It's a very nice facility, and it's a pod system. It's the new modern system. One thing that they talk about just crime in general and revolving door and jail space that I wanted to look into, and we are looking into when I shut down the basement, is also the the community justice piece. I think if you're going to add more jail space, that has to be balanced with the appropriate programs and resources to help rehabilitate people, to reduce recidivism, to have programs in place that will help people with whether it's an alcohol problem or a drug problem or mental health resources. That whole total rehab, getting a person better before they're out on the street, to help reduce that. And I think that has to be combined with any type of increase in jail beds.
Are jail beds loaned in Jackson County to provide some space for federal lockup, for any other counties, things like that?
Yeah, so we have some for the federal government that are set aside through contract. And we also, the city of Medford pays on a case-by-case basis for some jail beds for when they need some to fill them.
But that number will fluctuate. I mean, it could be, three today and eight next week.
I think they have two that they hold. Someone's in it, but if they need it, then then we'll put one other people in.
Okay. You mentioned rehab and programs to try to cut back on recidivism. Now, when you were the deputy chief in Ashland, you worked on programs like You Have Options, which is really about a victim-centered approach to sexual abuse cases. So it seems to me that we can at least make an assumption that you have a belief that it's not just like lock them up, throw away the key, let's do this. You know, we do it by the book every time, that the book is somewhat flexible based on the circumstances for both victim and perpetrator. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it's a fair assessment. I think when you look at our county government and we have mental health services within the county, and we have community justice within our county, I think collectively mental health services, community justice, and the sheriff's office should all be working collectively. And we do a pretty good job of working collectively to service the citizens of Jackson County. And there's more to the problem than just in and out of jail. There's other issues that bring people to our facility, and there's things that can help them not come back.
So what, for example, is out there to try to reduce contacts with people in mental health crisis coming face-to-face with police? What are steps available to people if I got this problem, I got to call 911, but I don't want the deputies to show
up,
that kind of thing?
So we've really improved our crisis intervention training within Jackson County. It started in Ashland, and then Medford has really taken the lead in this training the last probably last 3 years, and we're getting a lot of people in Jackson County trained on crisis intervention when it comes to working with someone with mental illness in a crisis, what resources are out there for them. I know Jackson County Mental Health has taken great strides to improve the resources and opportunities to assist. So I would still encourage people to call 911 if they have concerns, and it's on us to get the appropriate resources out there to help somebody with a mental illness.
Does it usually come down to an issue of where dollars can be spent, though? I mean, people expect jails, they expect deputies, they expect handcuffs and guns and the whole works. I mean, so if it came to push come to shove, let's put a little money into mental health instead of to the sheriff's office. They probably have to go through you about that one first, but I mean, how do those allocations get made, and is there even enough money to be able to make them?
Well, I think that's fair to say. I think that's what has to be looked at in county government and just government in general. How are we spending money, and what's the most appropriate resource, and where does it need to go based on our problems, based on our service levels, based on what we need to accomplish? So those decisions need to be made by our government and collectively with community input, with the problems that we're having in our communities. And I can't tell you what that is off the top of my head right now, but certainly if it's a better resource to go to community justice at the time, or if it's a better resource to go to the sheriff's office or health and human services or whatever, then we need to make those decisions.
But there are places at this point in Jackson County where you at least can send people that are not straight to jail.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So other issues that crop up just for police generally in recent years, I mean, when you consider things like, Ferguson, and that's all I really need to say, I guess. Mm-hmm. You can just go right down the line from there. How do you frame the set of issues first to your own people and then to the public?
That's a good question, and I guess we've all, maybe not. There's a term out now called the Ferguson effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how has that changed law enforcement across the country? And how it's changed law enforcement across the country to some extent is there's been a loss of public trust when it comes to law enforcement or police officers. So there's a couple things that I've been looking into to help build that public trust back up. And there are two programs that I've looked into this year. One is called Procedural Justice and Police Legitimacy. And that sounds lofty, but basically what it is, the procedural justice part is how we do our job, and the police legitimacy is how we do our job with the public and what do they think. And the other thing that is pretty new is called fair and impartial policing. And similar, just if you look at the title, similar thing. Are we being fair and impartial with how we police? So those two concepts is, I think, those are easy for the public, you know, because they're like, well, yeah, we all want, public trust. We want police legitimacy. We want to trust our people. We want them to be fair. We want them to be impartial. And officers and deputies, they don't have an issue with this, but where they would say is 95, 99% of us, they're all going to be saying, I do that anyway. But because there's been a couple bad incidents around the nation that have painted us with a poor brush, now we're forced to come up with these things, and the boss wants us to do something that I've always been doing. So that's kind of the rub within law enforcement. But I think it's we always have to chiefs and sheriffs who are put in the position of the middle, we need to just balance that by saying, yeah, but we do have to overcome some of these perceptions, and it is important to always revisit that we want to be fair and impartial and build public trust.
Much more to talk about with Sheriff Corey Falls from Jackson County about the situation with policing in his own county and policing more generally. You can join the discussion on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Back with Sheriff Corey Falls and you in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Corey Falls, the sheriff of Jackson County, in office about 13 months now. So we're taking a look back at year one and a look ahead to the remainder of his term and the things he's trying to implement and just the general issues that face somebody dealing with a county law enforcement agency in our region at this time in history. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to join the conversation by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Brian in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, hello. I just have a quick question. How often does Jackson County Sheriff's Department have to respond to incidents in Josephine County because they don't have the resources to deal with critical issues? Is it a frequent thing, sometimes thing? How often?
All right. Thanks for the question, Brian.
Thanks for the question. We don't respond to Josephine County for anything in terms of them having a lack of resources. We don't do that. However, if anybody at any surrounding county calls an emergency situation, if there's a life-threatening situation to a deputy, and they're asking for help, we would send somebody in a code response to assist them in an immediate threat. But we don't send to assist Josephine County just because they have a lack of resources.
There are some, let's see, you do some search and rescue work goes on over there.
Oh, yes, yeah. And I was thinking of patrol. In terms of search and rescue, most of the counties in the Southern Oregon region will assist. But our search and rescue, predominantly those people that are assisting are volunteers. So when we get requests for assistance, we'll send volunteers to help. We actually only have one full-time search and rescue sergeant and then a couple deputies that assist him.
I don't quite get that, how it is that some of the most hazardous jobs that are out there for, you know, search and rescue is not an easy thing to do. And these require a lot of training as well. And they're volunteers.
Yeah, they're phenomenal. I don't have the hours with me, but I remember from my budget presentation last year, the amount of hours that these volunteers do and the training they get are just, they are such a great resource to Jackson County. I don't think the citizens really realize how great they are.
All right, so no particular other than for emergency backup for Josephine County stuff
right.
going on. But when another county will request some backup, you did send deputies to Harney County
yes.
during the refuge takeover.
Yes.
What were the circumstances there?
So we got a mutual aid request from Sheriff Ward over in Harney County to assist the citizens. They just didn't have the resources for their own citizens there in Harney County to for public safety. So that was a collaboration of several counties. I think I want to say 30 counties in the state sent resources, and then some cities sent resources to assist in Harney County.
So kind of a rotation, and yours came up.
It was a rotation. Ours came up, and I felt that was part of the greater team effort in Oregon to support another county, and we possibly could have a huge incident in Jackson County one day and ask for mutual aid requests, and I would want people to send and come help us and not be the lone person that's not the team player.
That's the next obvious question, though. I mean, given the amount of federal land there is in Oregon and the frustration over how it is managed, which is different in Western Oregon. It's more about timber than it is about rangeland. But I can imagine there was a sense among lots of, well, probably 30 other county sheriffs in Oregon that there, but for the grace of God, go I. So, I mean, what, how do you think about this in the larger context of how you prepare for it within, mm-hmm. with the eventuality of it happening in your own county?
Well, yeah, we think about this. We think about just problems that could occur. I don't know if it's going to be a problem or not, but certainly the pipeline has been discussed a lot. That's going to be coming through Jackson County.
The LNG pipeline.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and I don't know what's going to develop from there. We are going to be looking into the amount of resources that we might need for that, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know what that would bring, but we certainly have to always be forward thinking and preparing for things that can hit and make sure that we're not overestimating something or underestimating something.
How much outreach or dialogue do you maintain with groups that are bound to be somewhat unhappy with the Fed? You know, the Oath Keepers or the constitutional sheriffs, you know, any one of the number of groups that are out there.
I haven't had a lot of in-person contact with them. Certainly I'll get emails every now and again about concerns that come up. But not a lot of personal interaction. And
to the issue of the constitutional sheriffs in particular, I mean, it's been about the time you took office was when mm-hmm. things seemed to be peaking with sheriffs across the country saying they would not be enforcing new gun control measures that came from the federal government, while in fact none had been proposed, we should point out. Mm-hmm. But I mean, so where do you come down in that general realm?
So I haven't taken the stance, and I won't take the stance that I won't enforce certain laws. I don't think that's my job to determine what laws I should enforce and I should not. I certainly will take stance on things that I make it known what I don't necessarily agree with, but I'm not the one that makes the final decision on what I will enforce and not enforce. I'm sworn to uphold the law, whether I agree with it or not. And I think there's other ways to change some of those things. And that's the route I would try to take.
Was it, I guess it was Coos County then voted on that that resolution that said that they would direct the sheriff not to enforce laws, which would put any sheriff in kind of a pickle. And
yeah, that would be certainly a unique situation, especially with an ORS out there that says that we shall enforce the law. That's one of the duties of the sheriff. Mm-hmm. So it'd be a unique
Oregon revised statutes ORS. Let's take a call from Joe in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Corey Falls, the Jackson County Sheriff.
Good morning, sir. I want to say thank you very much for the subject, and thank you for your service, Sheriff.
Thank you.
I'd like to point out, make an observation as far as relationship between the community and law enforcement. I believe that at certain points throughout the history, you know, of our policing throughout, you know, this country, there's a distinguishment between a peace officer and then a law enforcement officer. And I would like to get your thoughts. And have you seen that relationship begin to deteriorate to where things are moving more toward law enforcement? And you hear a good catchphrase all the time is militarization. I won't go that far, but more so law enforcement than peacekeeping. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Joe. I appreciate
it.
Thank you, Joe. And I can tell you the new terminologies. You mentioned peace officer, and I can tell you the terminology that we're talking about now in law enforcement is there's always been the warrior mindset in law enforcement, and now we're going to more of a guardian mindset. So that, I think that's similar to what he was talking about, is just that peace officer, and how can we be guardians of the peace instead of warriors out there. So that's the mentality that's in some of the terminology that's coming out. I do think that we need to, we're always going to say officer safety because, you know, I think last week alone, 7 officers were killed in the line of duty. So that's
across
that's,
the country.
Yeah, across mm-hmm. the country. That's on our mind. However, there is a mindset of peace officers and guardians of our public. And we need to certainly balance that, and we need to do a good job of building trust in that.
That is going to certainly have you falling back on the skills you got for your organizational management degree. But so, I mean, how do you meld different kinds of views, especially when you're working with deputies who were hired under the previous sheriff largely, mm-hmm. And then bringing your own people and you know, try to get this idea that no, we did this before, now we're going to do this instead.
Well, one great thing about the going into the sheriff's office is deputies were ready to change. They were ready for a different perspective. They were ready for to come up for some fresh air. So the changes in our office, not everybody agrees with everything, but certainly people have been very open-minded. We've had open discussions about things, and that's been the more open lines, the communications that we've had in the sheriff's office, which I've tried to open up, it's been easier to communicate and talk about some of these things.
Speaking of hiring your own people, though, I understand that there's been a bit of an issue with the applications you're receiving since Oregon legalized recreational marijuana.
Well, we're looking at that. I mean, it's I don't know what it's for, but certainly we've gotten less applications over the last 6 months. And as we've looked into it, the only thing that we could see is the legalization of marijuana has been different.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's the sole reason or not. So we've been reaching out to other agencies and other organizations to see if they're seeing similarities. If they are, then that'll be interesting. If it's not, then we'll continue to do the best we can to get the information out there that we're recruiting.
Where do you tend to hire from? I mean, do people come from city police forces? Do they come from smaller counties to more populated counties like Jackson? How does that all work?
Some do. I mean, we do a couple different processes. We do entry level, where we get a brand new person either out of college or somebody that wants to change careers that is not in law enforcement. And we'll hire them and send them to the police academy. Or we'll do lateral recruitments where someone that's already working for a law enforcement agency in a police department, whether in the state of Oregon or another state, and bring them through a lateral process. Those hires we can usually get them trained and out on the road quicker because they don't have to go through the police academy again. So helps us with efficiency sometimes. So we get them from a variety of places.
We have an email here from Mike in Medford. He says, thank you for the good work. I really appreciate your social media updates. It keeps the community involved and the sheriffs feel more community-oriented. Also, thanks for sending a small force to help out at the Malheur standoff. Question, with the rural counties having an extreme lack of law enforcement, would a regional sheriff's force be applicable if properly funded? That from Mike in Medford.
I think regionalization is good. I think there's time to talk about it. I think it wouldn't be as practical in terms of sheriff's offices because people, not just sheriffs, people take a lot of pride in voting their sheriff in. And there's some constitutional authority that comes mm-hmm. with that. There's some ownership that comes with that. And that would have to be changed first before you even started talking about the regionalization. We do a pretty good job of helping others out on occasion or regionalizing other aspects like communications. But in terms of regionalizing a sheriff's office with, you know, who's the sheriff's going to be, you know, how is that position going to be? That's going to be difficult to work out.
You think it's more easily done with municipal departments, like, you know, merging smaller city departments that are neighbors?
Well, that might be a little easier, but we could merge smaller agencies within Jackson County. We could incorporate and have contract cities, but I think the same thing. It's giving up that ownership of those cities. People want that control of having their own chief or their person in that position. So it would come with discussion and the amount of control somebody would give up.
Well, when you mention things like it's our chief in the next town, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. The sheriff's office is now in White City. It was moved mm-hmm. there by your predecessor out of the basement.
Yes.
Of the county jail. Any thought given to that continuing as the headquarters or considering mm-hmm. a different place?
No, that's going to continue as our headquarters. We have a nice facility out there. We have room to grow. We have our investigations are out there. Our civil department is out there, and our patrols ran out of there. So that's a good facility for us, and I don't see leaving there anytime soon.
Mike in Medford referenced the social media updates, mm-hmm. which is something you're doing more. There is more Facebook presence for the sheriff's office. What kinds of things are you doing?
Just updates, more updates. You know, the city of Medford has taken a lead in the Facebook realm. They've done an outstanding job. we're trying to do a better job of keeping the citizens of Jackson County informed with what we do. So we're dedicating some time to that. It's social media is a great way to communicate. It's a great way to keep people informed of what we're doing, get our message out there. So we're going to continue to do that. I started just this month. I gave the first weekly update at the every Friday. We're going to be doing that, and then all our division commanders have been taking a week. Tomorrow is going to be our support division commander that's going to be talking about investigations and civil and search and rescue. And then at the end of the month, I'll have another weekly update, and we'll continue to rotate through that.
What would you say is what would you consider the biggest accomplishment of year number two when we talk to you a year from now?
Probably right now we're just completing – it's going to be two things. We're just completing an organizational review for my first year by the Police Foundation, and they're going to have some plans for strategic plan. So at the end of year two, hopefully that strategic plan will be in place. And the other thing is our professional policing model, the stratified policing model, that will be rolling very well, and we'll be able to identify and solve problems.
You don't seem to have any more wrinkles than you had a year ago. So has this first year treated you relatively well?
So far, so good.
Right. Corey Falls is the sheriff of Jackson County. Thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me.